You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into another Wednesday edition of Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Great guest for you guys. First time guest on the show, Keith Parrish of Fast Break Breakfast. What's going on, man?
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm good. The Grizzlies are in full swing. We were having practices. We had media day on Monday. Lots of things happening, and the Grizzlies play a game on Sunday. I'm excited. It's finally here.
Yeah, I'm fired up as well. I think the most excited for me was just hearing Kyle Anderson participated fully in practice. That's my guy. So that was the only good news, I guess, I took out of the last, or the only news that really gave me excitement over the last 24, 48 hours.
Yeah, I saw that as well. I wanted to start with you and since you're talking about Kyle Anderson, you know, there's a lot about media days. A lot of people talk. Your general thoughts on media days. I mean, do you usually take anything away from there? Like what people say? I think I take a lot of things with a grain of salt, but I think there were a few interesting nuggets, mainly the Kyle Anderson stuff that he wasn't going to play and then he did. So, but generally, anything you usually can take away from media days? Like, are you kind of a guy that just kind of wait and see?
Yeah, I mean, you can't take much away. I feel like you can learn maybe – you can get a feel for the personality of new players just watching. Like if you're there, obviously – I was sitting at home in Nashville watching some just video clip, try to get a feel for some of the new players since there's so many unknowns as far as who these guys actually are and what they're like joining the Grizzlies team this year. But mainly, all the quotes are just the normal platitudes. The one quote, the best takeaway for me was Solomon Hill saying that he always keeps a bag packed by the door, just knowing he might not be around. So that, for me, that was the only quote where I was like, all right, I like that. But everything else was just like, no, I don't take any increased optimism or enthusiasm from what the guys are saying.
There's a lot of truth in that. And Solomon Hill just keeping a backpack by the door. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only thing I thought was, I thought was of note was, again, Kyle Anderson, when I talked to him, he did not, We all talked to him in a group. You know, there's a scrum there, but he did not seem like he wanted to play. He was ready to play basketball at all. And then, like you mentioned, you know, he practiced. Where Taylor Jenkins said he practiced fully on Tuesday. There seemed to be some mixed signals there. Hopefully that's all shored up and he's actually gonna play. But do you think Kyle Anderson, I mean, I guess what's the importance of Kyle Anderson to this team? I mean, it's a totally different offense for him. I mean, I don't know where he even fits in running and gunning if he doesn't shoot. I mean, I'm a big Kyle Anderson fan, but I don't even know where he fits in here.
Yeah, I mean, it's just in that offseason mode that you don't know if the coach is just saying, again, the platitudes or the cliches. Taylor Jenkins saying he wants to play pace and space and get up and down the court and play faster and shoot a bunch of threes. And obviously none of those things Kyle Anderson does. And it's also an awkward fit. We don't know how his fit is going to be with the Grizzlies playing a front court of Jonas Valanciunas and Jaren Jackson Jr. Kyle Anderson is not the most natural of fits at the three there because he doesn't provide that spacing. The driving space isn't going to really be there. I mean, maybe if Jonas is going to plant himself out at the three-point line, like he was saying in media day, that works. But no, it's a strange fit, and it's a guy who signed his contract under the previous regime the year before. So you wonder, as a guy who's under contract for a few years, is he part of the team's plans? I mean, he's still pretty young, and he's a super useful, good player. And you know, you said you like him. He might be my favorite Grizzlies player right now. Like I just. Something about the guys who can't shoot very well but get little deflections and are always looking to get other guys involved. I enjoy how they play. So Kyle Anderson, that is, I guess, the takeaway or one thing I'm looking forward to in the preseason and the start of the season is, like, how does he fit in? Do they want him to start at the three? Do they want him to operate like a bench unit? I don't know. So that'll be something I'll be keeping my eye on.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that we really, you know, wanted to see him more on the ball last year, and I think that's probably what – you might have to do with him. I mean, if he's out there as the you know, maybe with the bench lineup, I don't know, but it is very interesting to see. And this is a preseason game. We were Peter Edmondson, myself, Amari Sinkofa, maybe Chris Hanger. We're all sitting around talking about this on media day, and it is one of the most interesting preseasons we'll have had in a long time, just because we really don't know what these guys do together, how they fit together, how they play together. In previous years, it's been Mark, Mike, you know, Zach, you know, there's been a lot of known commodities on the team before. You knew what you're going to get in the season. There was really nothing to see in the preseason, but this preseason will actually be something that will be interesting to watch of how everybody fits together.
Right. I mean, that's, I think I was talking to Chris Harrington just about, like, anyone who says they understand this or has a good grasp on this Grizzlies roster, they're crazy. Every
right.
other year, we have so much stability and lack of roster turnover, and you understand who's going to be playing. I mean, there's always a few, like, surprises, like, oh, Chandler Parsons is starting at the small forward? That's weird. Or
right.
Andrew Harrison is starting opening night for the second year in a row? I didn't see that coming. But basically, we have a good feel. We at least know who those players are. This year, even if, you know, you watch the NBA all year round and, like, you do a podcast like I do, like a national NBA podcast, it's still, like, I can't pretend I've watched 100 Tyus Jones games where
sure.
I paid attention yeah. to him closely. Or even Jonas Valanciunas. Like, I've seen him play, like, what, 30 times? I know I watched him on the Raptors, but I wasn't focusing, studying on him. So, and those are the returning, like, a returning guy like Jonas Valanciunas. Even Kyle Anderson, we only got half a season out of him. So the whole Grizzlies team is a huge question mark. We saw, I can't remember what it was, 50 games of Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, the whole team. It's just like,
right. yeah.
man, what do they look like? Dylan Brooks, I remember 2 years ago, like, I know for a fact he played 82 games, but the Grizzlies won, what, 20 games that year. That
yeah, they were not
I
good.
I had one eye on that game, one eye on the other game. Like, I don't remember. Like, are my memories of Dylan Brooks real? Hard to say.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of unknowns. A lot of unknowns for this team and a lot of young players. Josh Jackson, in the not immediate days, on the hustle. Thoughts on Josh Jackson? I don't know. We've been doing these preview shows, and I got, like, wild answers. I got some people said that – one person said that Josh Jackson will be playing 20 minutes a night. Other people said he would get cut. So I don't know. It's such a wild range for him. It's weird. He's kind of a polarizing player, but they obviously opted to start with him at the hustle. His climbing said he had a path to work his way back if he could do the things that they asked him to do, whatever internal goals they had for him. Thoughts on Josh Jackson? I mean, where do you land on him?
He's a guy, I was asking Suns fans, like how does he fit in? Is he someone we should be excited about as a prospect to see if he can get going again? And even Suns fans were mixed on that. They were like, he needs playing time, is what a lot of people said. Like, you need to let him play and kind of figure it out. And to find out that the Grizzlies aren't really going to do that, him not being in training camp, I feel like that's kind of odd.
Right.
Somebody told me that they had presented to the team, like, this idea of, like, hey, you guys should go to Josh Jackson's people and say, why don't you start in the G League? Why don't you work your way back into the good graces? Why don't you present that path to him? And so that turns out that's exactly what they did. And as far as we can tell, that's something that Josh Jackson is okay with. But I don't know. It's kind of bizarre. Personally, I would guess they wouldn't waive him because that his salary amount, like that $7 million, it's just so, like, the sweet spot
right.
for combining with other salaries and matching in, like, a trade. So when the Grizzlies go into the season where they're going to lose a lot of games, they need to remain open to taking on some maybe contracts or moving some guys in and out. And having that $7 million figure that you can combine with the Miles Plumlee or Solomon Hill or, you know, just some of those other guys that aren't probably huge parts of the future. It seems like keeping that salary on the books to make trades would make sense, but I don't know. Maybe they think the likelihood of a trade like that is low, and so they do go ahead and cut him so they can keep somebody else.
Yeah, like I said, he's a polarizing player. I mean, you mentioned that salary is a very it's right in the middle. It's not too much, not too little, like you said, for matching purposes, but also just in general, just for straight up purposes. I mean, there's a lot of players that are in that range of, you know, of matching salaries if you needed to ship them out. So it's an interesting concept for him too. I mean, like starting the G League, like, you know, he's got to be, you have to think like he's got to be, something's got to be seriously kind of like wrong there. If that's the path they're going to take. I mean, because they're going to hold a roster spot for him to go to the G League and possibly play his way back. I don't know. It's a lot of weird things around it for sure.
Well, I was going to say that, like, I feel like when the trade was initially announced, I was half joking, saying, I want Josh Jackson. Like, that's okay if he's a young prospect, but I want to keep him so far away from my young, impressionable John Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. I was like, at that time, I was like, these guys are both 19. Now they're both 20. But like, these guys are 20-year-olds. I want a barrier between Josh Jackson and these guys. I want, you know, like, to keep that away. And I mean, I'm speaking from no knowledge, but maybe that's what they thought too. Like, we don't even want him in training camp because we're worried. The future of the franchise is obviously Jaren Jackson Jr. and John Morant. Let's keep these guys separate from him, thinking, I mean, I don't know, again, I don't know Josh Jackson personally, but maybe that was some of the line of thinking, like, this guy needs to prove himself before we decide to add him into the mix of getting to know our young guys.
What also goes back to the, even the front office, this it's such a different view the way this front office has as a proactive front office. I mean, they could, this, the last few years, they could have done the same thing with Chandler Parsons. They could have just, I mean, they finally did tell him to go away, but they could have been proactive, like, hey, look, we do not want you around Jaren. Like, this is a wrong thing for him or whatever. But they didn't. They obviously did in the end because it just got too much. But it's also the way that this front office views that situation differently than previous years. It's a very proactive approach of, hey, look, we're going to, you have to really tell us or show to us that you can be around, like you mentioned, young core, or you can just not screw up, or you can just not cause headache, PR headaches for us. You know, if you in the G League, you just got to go there and do it over there first. We don't even want you at media days, which is, not media days is a weird thing. But again, this front office is a proactive front office. It's different for sure.
Well, it's also interesting because the front office is so young. I mean, obviously Zach Kleiman, but even the head coach like Taylor Jenkins, like the people making the decisions, you know, Jason Wexler isn't even that old. So it's interesting in that way where, like, if you present this to a Chandler Parsons who's like, I am as old as some of you guys. I don't want you to, like, coach me on my personality or say, like, my behavior shouldn't be around these guys. So they obviously can do it a little more with a younger player like Josh Jackson. But it is interesting. I mean, it's interesting this front office right now. It's an experiment. It doesn't look like they have much diversity of thought. I guess there's some argument that it's great to have everyone on the same page. But a lot of the guys, head coach all the way up to the front office, have similar backgrounds as far as education and career paths. And so there's a uniformity of thought that also can be criticized. Like, normally you want to have a lot of differing opinions in the room. So I think one of the experiments for this Grizzlies team, as they build this team, as they go the route of let's trade away some players for assets, let's bring in some young guys, we want to see what they are, let's tell Josh Jackson to go stay over here, we're going to keep him away. It's interesting to see how that works out. Like, if it works out great, like, all right, cool. But maybe there's something to say, like, you need a little more of differing opinions when you're making decisions for the team.
Yeah, it goes a long way just to have someone just kind of play, even if it's just someone playing devil's advocate, you know, like, what if we did this instead of that, you know?
Yeah.
It goes a long way just to have that other thing in the room of saying everybody going, yeah, it's a great idea, let's do it. And in reality, probably maybe a terrible idea. It will be a interesting year just from all perspectives, even the front office, how they handle things as they go into the season and they manage egos and manage players, and even Taylor Jenkins managing these people. I mean, he's obviously been around a lot of different organizations, so he's been around egos and players. But, you know, until you're the guy, it's all different. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. We'll talk more with Keith Parrish from Fast Break Breakfast. Welcome back to the show. Talking with Keith Parrish of Fast Break Breakfast, his podcast. If you guys don't already subscribe to that, make sure you go and do so. It's a great show. I want to talk about a little bit more about the front office because I'd be remiss if we don't talk about Andre Iguodala. Even though I'm frankly sick of talking about Andre Iguodala, but same thing. They don't ask him to show up, which I think is a great idea. But it's the same kind of situation with Josh. I mean, is it? You think it's obviously more of distractions. Taylor doesn't have to answer the questions. Andre doesn't have to answer the questions. Obviously, we asked Zach about it. He didn't answer any questions, so he kind of answered the questions. But Zach's like a robot. Like, he's a lawyer. Like, he's not going to tell you anything that he doesn't want you to know.
Right.
But Andre Iguodala, I mean, I'm guessing they're going to wait to December 15th. Who knows? But I think it would be better for them to make a trade now if they could get someone to take Josh Jackson, or maybe they get someone to take Solomon Hill. I don't think they would, but you never know. I don't even know what that would be of freeing up roster spots now. But same thing, you're keeping Andre Iguodala for a roster spot now in hopes that you can move him for something in the future. I don't know.
Right. As far as using a roster spot, I kind of think maybe at some point you have maybe too many development projects. And so I don't know if they need the roster spot to like take another look at a guy. I mean, I guess there's also the line of thinking it's good to have as many lottery tickets as possible. Like maybe one of these guys pans out to be good.
Sure.
But to some degree, I'm not worried about the roster spot as much. If they trade him before December 15, I think we already know what most of the options are out there. It seems like the Nuggets, if they wanted to move on from just dump like Mason Plumlee in a deal, it seems like Iguodala could step into a starting role on that team, and they'd be really good. As far as what return the Grizzlies would get in a trade like that, I don't know. If the Nuggets offered them just like a second round pick, and maybe Juancho Hernan Gomez, who's like a vague prospect, and Mason Plumlee, would the Grizzlies bite at that? Say, hey, one second round pick is worth it. I almost think they're in the situation now where maybe they're going to play it out until December 15 just to see if they can shake loose any form of lower draft pick, because you have a wide open. I think it's a smart play. I mean, I guess because the league is so wide open, there's like 8 teams that think they might have a chance to actually win the title this year, that you wait till December 15 where teams can then trade all those deals they signed in the summer. And maybe based on injuries to other teams or a path opening up for one team, they're like, you know what, let's go ahead and give the Grizzlies like our next year's first round pick. Will end up in like the 20s or something, and
right,
to get Iguodala. So I think it works out. I think hypothetically, if they don't wait for that, like what's the lowest you would trade Andre Iguodala for? Would you, Mark, trade just to bring in like a veteran guy who can fill a position, i.e. like Kent Bazemore? Like if the Grizzlies wanted to trade Kent Bazemore, I mean, trade Iguodala for Kent Bazemore, no picks attached whatsoever, like just for Bazemore to come in and be like that good locker room guy, good veteran guy, a guy who could probably start at the two immediately. Like, would you do something like that?
Probably. Yeah, I'd probably do that. But I mean, I think I would probably be after a pick. That's the reality is I don't know. I have find a hard time thinking they're going to get a first round pick for Andre Iguodala. I just don't know.
Right.
And when I were talking about this, I did a little like a 15-minute show on Andre Iguodala is, you know, the longer you wait, the less options you have, because, you know, I don't know. I mean, they're going to be people out there that are going to be contenders. But I also think the sooner you can do a deal, you probably have people who think they like Denver. Maybe Denver thinks they can win a title right now, but in February, if they have injuries, and it's a totally different thing, you know, it's just, I don't know. There's a lot of variables with Andre Iguodala. It's a gamble, but I just don't know if they're going to get a first round pick for Andre. So if someone said you can have Kent Bazemore for Andre Iguodala, I'd probably do that.
Yeah, I disagree. I guess as far as I don't feel like there's any harm in waiting. I don't feel like any opportunities will close down. I feel like if the Blazers were like, hey, we'll give you, we would prefer based on positional fit, we just prefer to have Iguodala instead of Kent Bazemore, I feel like they will have that same opinion in December or like in January. I don't feel like that would go away. So it would make sense to the Grizzlies front office to be like, it's more important to the future of our franchise. They decide to maybe wait for 2 second round picks as opposed to just having a Bazemore just fit into the roster. And the only reason I'm saying Kent Bazemore is he's one of the few guys out there whose the contracts are even matches. It's an expiring deal, and he fits a positional need. Not that you're worrying too much about positional need on this Grizzlies team, but as a fan, I'd like to see, all right, if we know we're developing Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr., maybe let's just put a competent professional NBA player in the rotation with them, as opposed to like, oh, now Ja Morant's playing beside John Conchar, or Dylan Brooks is playing slightly out of position. So just to make the roster a little clearer and focus on Jaren and Ja, I might do a deal like that. But I don't think that these opportunities will go away. I don't think there's any harm in waiting.
Well, I think I view Andre Iguodala more as a utility, you know, as far as for championship contenders. That's more the way I view him. But either way, like even if someone offered me 2 second round picks, I'd still view that as still a win in my book. I mean, you're chalking up your asset. You got an asset for your. It's a free asset. You could trade it for a ham sandwich and it'd be a win. Like it. Yeah. Anything you do here, and I think there is something to be said for having a veteran on the team, you know, that knows how to that's been in the league. We're just using Kent Bazemore as a idea here, but having someone like Ken Bazemore on the team, there's something to say for that. I mean, having John Jaren, I mean, learning how to win in this league is a real thing. Learning how to be a professional in this league is a real thing. The travel, I mean, there's a lot that goes into being an NBA player other than just on the court stuff. And so, if that option was presented to me, because there's always, you might want to keep Ken Bazemore around. I mean, there's always that option too. So, I think there are a lot of. I think there are going to be a lot more options in December, and I don't blame it all for waiting and holding on to Andre Iguodala, because, like I said, he's an asset, and I said it in the summer. Even if they waived him, it still would have been a win there, because you already got the pick for him. But trying to extract value out of your assets is what we all do in more playing 2K. It's like, well, we'll flip this person for that person. It's the idea of trying to extract as much value as you can for the asset. And I don't have any ill will towards Andre Iguodala for getting paid a lot of money to sit around in LA. I don't care. No. But the Grizzlies are doing what they should. I'm always curious what that outcome's going to be. You know, obviously, no matter what it is, it will be fine. I just wondering what the other people around the other league will view, how they view Andre Iguodala. Is he utility? Is he someone they could resign to a veteran's minimum deal? Would be a utility next year again. You know, there's always varying opinions there.
Yeah, no, I assume he's purely hired gun. He's like a one season hired gun. It's going to be that team that decides we are exactly one Andre Iguodala from being the best team we can be and being a title contender. And we're just going to, it's completely playoff mercenary, because the teams that won him, they don't need him in November or December. Probably these are going to be the teams that are making the playoffs, and they're like, all right, we made it to the trade deadline. You know what? Let's go ahead and give them 2 second-round picks for this guy. So I think Iguodala, he didn't care about playing basketball until then anyway. So I don't – the arguments of, like, it's bad somehow or it's not treating Andre Iguodala right, I don't believe it. I think both sides got their information out in the public sphere to negotiate. You know, he didn't get the buyout he wanted, but he understood this was going to be the thing. And so I think the Grizzlies are playing it right. You know, I can't imagine what – blowing up in your face would even mean in this scenario. It just seems like the front office, like you said, is trying to extract every little advantage they possibly can, which I think is important.
Yeah, I think it is too. I think the being mad at Andre Iguodala is a weird thing, but I think that's unique to Twitter. I don't think that's I think that's unique to like the bubble that we see online on Twitter, not really anywhere else. I don't know if that's the larger view, and that's kind of get tunnel vision, and because you're surrounded by some of these opinions sometimes. So I think that's weird. Who cares if Andre Iguodala is unhappy making a lot of money sitting in LA and not having to do anything at all. That should bother you in the least. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. We'll do one more segment and talk about the future of this young Grizzlies team. Welcome back to the show, talking with Keith Parrish of Fast Break Breakfast. Again, if you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, make sure you go and do so. We talked a lot about, obviously, the things that have happened before the season and other players, but Ja and Jaren seem like two kids that are just like really excited to play basketball together and just generally having fun. I mean, like, I couldn't imagine what it's like to be 19 years old, 20 years old, being in the NBA, but I think it helps that they're both young together. And I think that helps they're both going to kind of go through a lot of the same things together and grow as a player, grow as players together versus individually on different teams.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's the Grizzlies won the lottery, both literally and kind of figuratively, as far as getting two young guys, a backcourt guy and a frontcourt guy to pair up together. Seems like personalities are a great fit. They've been spending a lot of time together this summer. Summer League, becoming really good friends. And it's like, from a marketing point from the Grizzlies, as they do the rebuild, that seems perfect. the Grizzlies actually have a guy with like big national cachet or a lot of clout. People are excited about him whenever he does stuff. You have like Dwayne Wade retweeting him and Jaren together. All the national NBA newsbreakers are like, the Grizzlies have said John Morant is a full participant. You know, stuff that the Grizzlies right. never made national news just with a small little update. So
yeah, I've never cool. got an ESPN notification about anybody else.
Right, right. So it's cool to have like a big popular guy. The big question obviously is like, is he good at basketball? Like, we haven't seen him play. I think that's the thing I'm the most nervous about is like, you know, I saw him play one college basketball game and didn't see him play summer league. And there's been other years, you know, where it's not the same thing as the second pick, but like, oh, I remember watching Wade Baldwin's first summer league game and being like, oh, he doesn't look very
right.
good. And then,
yeah.
or like watching whoever, like Jamon Carter, like, oh, people love this guy in his first summer league game. You're like, oh, huh, all right. And it, so it's funny, like, I'm so nervous. It's like, if he turns out to be okay or even like pretty good, if he turns out to be that like, you know, vaguely Jeff Teague comp. It's
right.
like, all right, fine, we can build around this. If he turns out to be like, oh, he's way too small and he can't finish at the bucket, he's like a Brandon Jennings who can't shoot as well. And you're like, oh, that's not great. Now where do the
yeah.
business team go? But as far as like in the off season, yeah, right now we're in the sweet spot, the honeymoon of just all excitement. And I'm growing anxious as it becomes actual time to see him play basketball. Of like, I mean, I know my first snap judgment of him means nothing, but I'm still like, man, I really hope he's good. If he's not good, it's like all the summer optimism is gone, and it's like, whoa, how do the Grizzlies rebuild now?
Yeah, I mean, I love the idea of John Morant because that's what it is right now. It's the idea of
yeah,
what
yeah.
he could be. Like when he got drafted, I did a whole 15-minute show talking about how awesome he was, but obviously. I've been saying for some time now as well that, you know, expectations should be tempered for John Morant. I mean, it's a hard position to be good at right away in this league. Like
yeah.
it is the hardest position to be really good at right away. And so they're, you know, look at all the great point guards and they've taken quite a while to develop. And so, you know, hopefully he is that person. Hopefully he is the idea of John Morant. What we love is that person. But like you mentioned, like, we just don't know. We really don't know. And so we're going to find out Sunday, at least in a little bit, in a tiny idea of a way, what he can do on the court. His court vision is something that I always go back to, like the passability. I think that's something it's hard to teach. And I don't think it really goes away in the NBA. I don't know about you, but I think that's something that can translate to this level easier than most things.
Right. I trust like the draft people and reading about people who've studied like all his college tapes and looking on synergy for his play creation. I'm like, all right, great. I'm glad this translates. So that's where I do take some optimism. But then also like I get pessimistic when like I've seen him in person. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
He's so small.
He is.
So small. Like he's shorter than me and he's skinnier than me. And I'm like a 6'4 string bean, you know. I might have put on a little like dad pounds, but I'm still like, this guy's kind of tiny, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I had never been next to him until Monday, and yes, he is not as big as you would think he is. Someone that I, just off the cuff though, someone that who is way bigger than you think that you thought is Jay Crowder. That guy has some serious guns. Like,
yeah.
I was talking to him on Monday. And I just couldn't help but look at his biceps, and I was just like, "Oh my gosh! Like this guy is jacked."
Yeah,
that's not what I was expecting.
Whenever you see, well, I remember the first time I was ever around the NBA players, or the first game I ever went to. I remember like going down like really close to the court and being like, "These guys on TV look skinny. These guys
yeah.
are ripped." And then it's like, going to like NBA Summer League, we're just around a bunch of NBA players. Like everyone is so huge. I remember
yeah.
seeing that there was some defensive tackle. There's a Sue. He was there at the NBA Summer League one year, like standing by NBA players, and I was like, that all-pro NFL defensive tackle does not look physically impressive compared to NBA players because they're just so much taller and ripped, which is also why it makes me like concerned for John Morant when I'm like, that guy looks like a skinny kid. Like he's so small compared to all these other like super muscular grown men.
Yeah, it is a thing. Like the first time I ever covered an NBA game, and I was on the court pregame, and I don't remember who it was. It was just one of their centers, and I was just like, God, this is way different than I expected. Like these guys are huge. Like I mean, I know that
yeah,
I and in your mind, you know they're huge, but like I'm 5'8". So to me, like, anybody's a giant, really. But like, then you're like, man, these guys are really big. So yeah, it you know, Ja Morant being small is, you know, it's a real thing. Like, it'll be interesting to see how much weight he can put on this year. I mean, I think that should be an emphasis for them, is getting on the, you know, obviously in the weight room. But yeah, just being able to finish around players. Because even like someone like Westbrook, who is, you know, not tall by NBA standards, but he has got a lot of muscle in him to really finish it in contact. And some people kept trying to compare Russell and Ja, which I don't think is a fair comparison at all, but just tried to compare the athleticism. But like, Russ is like way bigger. I mean, way more. He has way more strength to finish around players and over players than Ja does right now.
Yeah, I think it was on Twitter, Cavs Nada was saying he's Russell Westbrook in Brandon Jennings' body. So it's like, I don't know if he's going to try some things, and I'm worried it's not going to work out for him.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. Before we get out of here, let's talk about Jaren Jackson real quick. What do you think Jaren looks like this year? I mean, from year one to year two, obviously he didn't even play all year last year, so we don't really know. But what do you think, I guess, expectations should be for year one, year two for him? Do you think he takes a big leap? Do you think he kind of regresses in the sophomore slump? Or what are your thoughts on Jaren?
I'm not anticipating a sophomore slump, but I do have tempered expectations. I saw someone say, like, oh, maybe like him and Jonas Valanciunas will both like be battling for the scoring title and the Grizzlies are like 20 points per game. And I'd be blown away if he averages 20 points per game, even if, you know, it's a lot of garbage buckets and the team's bad. Like, it seems like him taking such an offensive step would be really surprising to me. I hope the offense runs through him a lot more and he's given every opportunity, you know, to create for others, to beat guys off the dribble who are bigger and slower than him, and get just as many shots as makes sense. I feel like last year one of the big frustrations was just him not being used. It seemed like Kyle Anderson was the only guy who wanted to get him the ball. It seemed like J.B. Bickerstaff had no interest in letting him be a big part of the offense. So that was a frustration, and I hope that changes this season. But I wouldn't expect massive scoring numbers. He doesn't strike me as like a dominant scorer. I mean, maybe he becomes, you know, in year two, year three, year four, like a Chris Bosh type scorer. But it wouldn't surprise me this year if the improvements as far as statistically were pretty minor. Like if he was just like, oh, he averages 15 points per game or 16 points per game or something like that. The issue, I guess, would be someone on this team has to score. Like, they're going to score 90 points probably no matter what. But my expectations are not very high as far as him, like, coming out being, like, a 20-9 guy. I just hope he can get a few more, you know, defend the defensive glass a little better, pull down some rebounds, and, like, if he averages 15, 16 points per game, that's kind of in line with what I'm expecting.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, like you mentioned, him being a scorer, I think he'll get a lot of points just because I think there's not a lot of points to go around. And that's just really the case of, I mean, it's just like we saw with Jonas Valanciunas, which I think will be different this year. But yeah, at the end of the year, he had a lot of points, but there was just a lot of points to go around. There's nobody there.
Right.
And so, you know, if you look at their wing depth right now, and there isn't really anybody. I mean, De'Anthony Melton is hurt. Josh Jackson's not here. I mean, Kyle Anderson is clearly not himself. You know, so there's, you know, Dylan Brooks and Marco Guderich. I mean, so there's just not a whole lot to go around. And so I think Jaren's a known commodity, at least with this, I think a lot of some of the other players on the team. And you kind of know what you can get from him from a little bit that he played last year. But I think there'll be points, but only for the fact that there are points to go around because it'll be a shitty team. But
well, also to consider, it's like last year when Jaren Jackson Jr. played, Mike Conley was with him, and I think every game he played, Marc Gasol, like he barely played after. I can't remember. Did he play after the trade deadline?
But it's he like did he, not much. He only played a couple games.
He only played that's right. He played two games with Valanciunas. So like every game Jaren Jackson Jr. played last year, he had someone way better, or at least, you know, way more accomplished, way better on the court with him. This year, you know, they're like, oh, let's send two guys every time he gets the ball. Like he's gonna throw it to. He's going to throw it to Dylan Brooks. Like, what's the worst that can happen? You know, he's going to throw it to De'Anthony Melton. Or like, they're going to be so hard up for points that it seems like defenses could swarm Jaren Jackson Jr. And it could be a struggle.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it all depends on what other people do around him. You know, like you mentioned, that there's a lot of attention that's going to be focused on him and Jonas, for that matter, because Jonas is also a known commodity in the NBA, what he can and can't do. So there's going to be a lot of attention paid to him, especially early on. So, you know, can Marco Guderic shoot? Can he play in the NBA? Can Dylan Brooks actually back to shoot a 3-point? Like, if they don't have anybody that can actually make plays on the wing, you know, it will probably be a long year for Jaren, and he's going to see a lot of doubles and, you know, just a lot of people just paying much attention to him and just sagging off of other people and just saying, hey, let's, you know, it'll be a lot of Tony Allen specials. Just let him shoot and see what happens, because we don't care anymore.
Make Grayson Allen beat us.
Yeah. Yeah. And as we've seen, clearly that can't work. I mean, we don't know Grayson Allen is either, but he clearly can't do that at the NBA level. Not yet anyway. So yeah, it's a lot of questions for sure. Keith, I appreciate you joining me. Keith Parrish again, Fast Break Breakfast is this podcast. If you're not already subscribed, go and do so. It's a great show. I promise you won't regret it, man. I appreciate you doing this on a Wednesday morning.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thanks for having me on, Mark.
Yeah, man. We'll do it again soon.